From iAfrican Media, this is iAfrican Bites, a podcast that features commentary on African news, insights, opinions, and analysis with tech industry leaders and professionals. The podcasts are from interviews conducted by the iAfrican team, whether at events or when needed for commentary. I'm Badawun Kosokwane, host and editor-in-chief for iAfrican.com, spelled www.iafrican.com. Professor Benjamin, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican.com. And thank you for hosting us. We're at live from the University of Ghana. As you can tell, we're actually in the epicenter of deep learning in Durban. It feels really good to be here. You know, for the longest of time, it was, you know, chit-chats, Zoom meetings, but now it actually feels good to be here. It's my first time.
Welcome.
Yeah, it's my first time. So, you know, I'm looking forward to many more. And it's really beautiful. 800 delegates from like all over Africa. At the airport, I met people from South Africa. Okay, I came with people from South Africa. Lesotho, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and Tunisia. It was such a good ride.
Do you know what I love? Which is something I've never seen before.
Yes, man.
That like people, like we come together for the Indaba. This is
100%.
People arrive and there'll be people, you know, from South Africa all the way up to Egypt, you know, West Coast, the East Coast, everything. Yes. Everyone arrives and they're hugging each other and like, hey, how's it going? And I'd never seen this in Africa before.
Yes.
Like, you know, you see the politicians do this on TV.
100%.
But like, who knows people from like all these other African countries?
Yeah.
I think that's a big problem for Africa that we don't have those kinds of connections.
100%.
And to me, that's just something beautiful.
Yeah. No, I mean, last night at the opening party, I mean, that was amazing. The DJ was doing from Egyptian music. It really felt good. It really felt good. Prof, I'm looking at your impressive LinkedIn biography here, and I'm going to do something different. So I'm just going to pick one or two sort of things that stick out for me, and then you'll tell me what the journey was and what were you doing, and just walk me through that memory lane. So let's start from the beginning. 2007, you're a tutor at WITS, tutoring, I guess, computer science. How was that?
That was cool. So that was back when, you know, So I did my undergrad at WITS.
Okay.
In computer science and applied maths. Mm-hmm. And I did my honors there as well, actually in both subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, while as an honors student, we would get involved in tutoring.
Yes.
And I say from that moment, I really loved it. That like being able to help inspire like the students, you know, it's not the next generation yet because it's quite close.
Quite close,
but you know, to work with younger students and get them excited about the kind of things that get me excited.
Yes.
These kind of interesting technical ideas.
Right.
And, you know, so I think that was really the beginning of what ultimately grew into my academic mm-hmm. career mm-hmm. was kind of engaging with students and finding it such a rewarding experience. Mm.
You know what I love about tutoring? It also gives you an opportunity to re-fall in love every year with your own studies as well. Okay, this is why I went into this. This is why I love this theme. It's really amazing. Prof, you then become a PhD candidate at University of Edinburgh in 2009, 2014. Walk me through that.
So when I finished up at WITS, so I did this double honors and I really wanted to study further. And I was really kind of excited by the ideas, artificial intelligence, you know, all the cool sci-fi stuff. And so I didn't really have the opportunity to study postgraduate in South Africa at that point, which was interesting. I think I had a very good undergrad. And I'll come back to that, but you know, I didn't really have those options. And so I looked abroad, there were some kind of role models that had done these kinds of things before. And I found my way to the UK, to Edinburgh, and I did my master's there. Okay. And I actually originally wanted to go to the US to do my PhD, but then I just really enjoyed where I was. I enjoyed like working with my supervisor and the other people around. So I stayed there for my PhD. And you know, that was a crazy moment because we touched on like things that now we would call machine learning. We touched on in my undergrad, but like when I got to Edinburgh, there were just so many more courses than I could possibly fit in like 3 timetables. Right. And it was just like mind-blowing experience to me. And there were like 150 people in the master's program with me. I couldn't even imagine these kinds of numbers. And a couple of interesting insights that I had there. Firstly was that I think the undergrad that I had at WITS, and I think generally in South Africa and actually in Africa, was really solid.
Okay.
Like we did a lot of like really strong theoretical groundings, mm-hmm. mathematical groundings, these sorts of things. And I actually think in many ways better than almost all of the colleagues that I had from all over the world in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
But we didn't have anyone doing anything that was like modern, any of the new exciting topics. Okay. Like that wasn't really much of a thing. There were a couple of people doing bits and pieces of it.
This is not South Africa.
In South Africa. Okay. And so that was one big thing is, you know, you tend to have this, and I think a theme that's led up to the Indaba is,
yes.
you know, as Africa, I think we tend to have this kind of case of imposter syndrome
yes.
that we don't do cool things
we're
behind
yes.
everyone else. But, yes. you know, our foundations are there. We can do it. And so that was really interesting. And then, you know, so I arrived there and get into all this exciting stuff. And then at that point, I really felt that I had to go abroad to study further.
Okay.
And when I ended up coming back here, my philosophy was, no one should ever have to do that again.
Do that 100%.
If they want to, we'll make that happen. 100%. Because they should. Like, that shouldn't be, like, you shouldn't have that forced choice.
100%. You should be able to have the same sort of palette of choice overseas back home, yeah, in Africa.
Exactly.
And I really like that a lot. Then, Prof, you went to the CSIR, where you're a principal researcher that culminated in 2016. What was your area? Was robotics, I'm guessing, your area of speciality? What other sort of research themes were you covering?
Yeah, so actually while I was doing my PhD, I was partially funded by the CSIR, okay. which is the Council for Scientific and Industrial Research
yes.
in South Africa, which is a really interesting place that kind of focuses on doing, you know, everything from research, but research with impact.
Mm-hmm.
And so often we worked there with kind of stakeholders in industry and mm-hmm. government and so on. I was in a group that really was the kind of foundation of mm-hmm. what became the big focus in machine learning
okay.
there. And particularly the group I was in focused on robotics.
Okay.
And so we had kind of projects that were in mining and agriculture and so on, but there was just an amazing group of academics and not you know, pure academics, but
okay.
like people with more like industry R&D type focus. And it was just a really inspiring group of people. And I think it's very cool that we have that as a country. But while I was there, I kind of, over time, started discovering that I was a true academic at heart.
Okay.
And like that working with students was an important
was
part
really
of like my identity.
Yeah. So now, Prof, in 2017, deep learning in Dabas then culminated, was birthed, right? You established. How did you meet with the other co-founders? Like, I want to know, like, was it lunch? Was it over lunch? And you're like, okay, guys, we want to do this. Like, what were the conversations then?
Actually, it was an interesting story. And I was looking this up the other day,
yeah.
actually. So at that point, I was kind of, I had a joint appointment between the CSIR and
okay.
Wits University.
Okay.
And I had regular meetings with a close colleague of mine. At that point, I think he was a faculty at Duke,
mm-hmm.
as guy George Conodaris,
okay.
Who was an ex-Witsy a few years ahead of me.
Okay.
And we'd become friends. We worked together on various projects. And he did a good job of keeping track of kind of the South Africans in computer science who went
Ooh.
Abroad and worked elsewhere. And he always spoke about a few people. And the one in particular was Ulrich.
Okay.
And we were chatting about this. And I said, look, you should really introduce us at some point.
Yeah.
And I think it was January 2017. George sent an email introducing Ulrich and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And we bounced a few emails around. We were, like, the three of us and many others were interested in the idea at that point of maybe we could get one of the big machine learning conferences
mm-hmm.
to come and be held in Africa.
In South Africa,
and, like,
yeah.
we were all South Africans, so we said, you know, South Africa mm-hmm. makes sense. And we'd all been excited about this kind of
yes.
in our own independent threads.
Yes.
And there was some backwards and forwards with the emails, and we said, let's have a call. And then I think we invited a couple other people. There was Shakir,
mm-hmm.
and there was Vukosi as well.
Yes.
And we had this call. And
was it a Zoom call or WhatsApp call or direct call?
I don't know. Probably back then it was like Skype or something.
Skype
Who knows?
Or something.
Yeah. we didn't have all the options back then. You know, back in the dinosaur age.
Yeah.
And there were all sorts of interesting connections there. Like Ulrich and Shakir worked together
Ooh.
At DeepMind.
DeepMind, okay.
I knew Vukosi. We'd actually met at an awards evening at the end of Matric, as
okay.
it turned out.
Really?
And then We went into first year at the same time. Okay. He was in engineering, I was in computer science, okay. where we kind of moved in the same circles.
Okay.
And we both went abroad to, he went to the US, I went to the UK, but we okay. ended up working in similar fields. So
okay.
we always had these kind of paths that overlapped.
Intertwined.
And, you know, we ended up, we had this call where we're kind of chatting about this and we realized we didn't like the idea that, you know, we figured kind of between everybody, we could probably bring a conference to South Africa.
South Africa.
It might take a bit of time to make this happen because, you know, sometimes a few years in advance. But we weren't that happy with the idea that, like, you bring the international community, parachute in, and then they leave.
And they leave.
So we thought, look, we want to do something that maybe, I don't know, has a bit more long-term okay. sustainability or something. And we're discussing the idea that, you know, maybe we should start our own thing. Now, at this point, you know, we're all either expats, like expat South Africans
yes.
or people that had been abroad, studied abroad and come yes. back, like Vukosi and myself. And we yes. said, look, let's put a thing together. Yeah. And, you know, maybe just a couple of days, we'll all give the talk. So like the guys overseas will pay their own way back.
Yes.
And there's maybe 30 people who would care.
Yeah.
Right? I'm sure we can find like 30 students in Africa who would care. But like we want to give back somehow.
Yeah.
And so this was in January.
Yes.
I think we're having this call in February. And we said, yeah, maybe we'll do it next year. No, like, let's do it now.
Let's
We've got the momentum,
year.
Otherwise it'll never happen.
Yeah.
And we decide we'll do it at WITS. Because there were, at this point, also a couple other people involved from Stellenbosch.
Okay.
So we said, no, let's do it at WITS first.
Okay.
We can do Stellenbosch
next year.
Because
it's easier transportation
exactly.
for everybody.
Exactly. And
flying in and out.
You know, I felt, you know, important about the spiritual home to a few of us
yes,
and so
yes,
on.
Yes, yes,
And so we started organizing this. And very quickly, we discovered there was a lot of interest.
Ooh.
And it just kind of mushroomed from there. So, you know, we ended up, there were 8 of us on the organizing committee that first year, which is crazy to think now that there's like 50, 60, 70
yeah,
people, you know,
volunteers and stuff.
Exactly. And there was like, yeah, so the 8 of us, we had a few of our like students running around helping
yeah.
out. Ended up being like a week-long event with 330 people.
Wow.
And then for everyone that came, there was like another one we didn't let in. We did this whole academic thing of
okay.
the, you know, double blind reviews, so not reviewing all the details, trying to evaluate who makes sense. And we thought, you know, we really want to push this idea of community.
100%.
Like, that's like an important principle to all of us. And, you know, we had all these discussions about what kind of event should it be, who should it be targeted at. We didn't want it to be one of these like very fluffy, superficial business type things. We wanted it to be really kind of core technical things. So, you know, makes sense postgraduate students and academics and people in industry working with technology and so on.
100%.
And that was really the start of it. We realized then pretty soon we needed money as well, because 100%. We would get emails from people that we'd accepted and they'd say, you know, thanks so much for accepting me. It's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. Unfortunately, I can't come because a ticket to South Africa
Ooh.
Costs 5 times my father's monthly salary.
100%.
And then we went, shit, okay, Ooh. Like, we got to do some fundraising.
Do something, yeah.
And yeah, we got a lot of support from, you know, already some of the big tech companies. We did a lot of like kind of canvassing corporates around
okay.
South Africa as well. And, you know, we started putting this together. We had this principle that students shouldn't pay entrance fees.
Okay.
But industry should. And we wanted as many students as possible that we would pay for flights and accommodation
okay.
for them. And I think in the end, I think it was about 60 that we managed to
okay.
get money together to cover.
Okay.
And that still to this day has been a big principle of the Indaba. But you know, that like first year, it was just, we had no idea this would work.
Ooh.
It was just this crazy idea we
Ooh.
Had. And like from there, it's become this regular thing that
100%.
Grows every year. We try new ideas every year. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. We innovate, more and more people get involved. We see people that have come as like attendees the first year,
yes.
and then like the next year, maybe they'll be
mentors.
Tutors and
yes.
mentors, and then slowly grow their way up to be like
yes.
keynotes or
yes.
key organizing members.
Yes.
And like that kind of sustainability, I think,
yeah.
is really exciting as well.
I mean, you've got a really good, impressive list of sponsors. Walk me through the first big fish sponsor that you got that really boosted the morale of the conference.
I think that was, I mean, everybody was going to like their networks.
Okay, their networks,
like,
100%.
Like,
but who was the one that did the first, you know, like, okay, no, we're with you guys and we pledge whatever amount or whatever resources?
So I think one that was really exciting was Google.
Okay.
Like one of the original founders, Stefan Hoss, was working for Google Research at the
okay.
time. And I don't remember exactly how it all transpired. Mm-hmm. I think his like manager was Jeff Dean and spoke to him and he said, this is amazing, we need to make sure this mm. happens. And you know, I was just starting to get a bit of that kind of feedback okay. from like important players.
100%.
Like there's a bunch of like random African dudes who want to make something happen. You know, one of the points I didn't mention is in this initial conversation that we had, we looked at, and it was actually mentioned in the opening today, mm-hmm. we looked at the big machine learning conference is called NeurIPS. At that time it was called NIPS.
Okay.
And, you know, this was the flagship event.
100%.
And we all had this experience that we'd go to these conferences and like, we'd be the token Africans there. Like, I shouldn't be the token African, right? And like, you know, we'd go there.
You should be your own heavyweight in your own right, in your own continent.
Exactly, and there should be like a lot of people there.
100%.
And we'd go there and there'd be a couple of us, like, you know, but we're based somewhere internationally or something. And at that point, there'd never been a paper at this conference that had been like written by an African at an African institution. And we just took that as a sign of, you know, when I said the like we didn't want the conferences parachuting in,
mm-hmm.
like that was it, right? Because where are these papers coming, like it's not going to add value to the local community, which 100%. Is important. And like in the years since then, we're now getting papers into all these big events.
100%.
And, you know, we've partnered with organizations like Black in AI and so on. And now, you know, there could easily be, you know, at least 40 Africans attending like a big conference somewhere, 100%. Which is a solid representation.
Prof, a conference like Deep Learning in Durban, how important is it? I mean, just on that conversation of academic output, how important is it for the body of knowledge of AI from an African perspective, from institutions that are based in Africa? How important is that?
So I think there's a few different ways to think about that. You know, on the one hand, there's a ton of problems in Africa that need to be solved. And it makes sense that it's the people on the ground solving that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of amazing technology out there and we need to connect the dots to make that happen. And so, you know, dealing with African problems is not something that's gonna be solved and shouldn't be solved in other parts of the world.
Yes, sir.
So that's the first piece, is like, we've got a lot of problems we need to solve, we've got the tools to do it, we need to put this all together. At the same time, I've always had this view that people come to us and say, oh, you're from Africa, you must use all this amazing machine learning stuff to solve African problems. And I say, yes, that's true, but actually it's also a bit condescending.
100%.
And we can build the same science anyone else can. Like, that's like just good for knowledge, good for the world. And that's actually become a key kind of principle in my lab, is that we focus a large amount of our time on building new theoretical methods and models, because I see no reason why, like, good, pure scientific ideas need to come from one part of the world. Like,
There's an imbalance.
Exactly, and like, you know, we've got people as smart and actually way smarter than people in other parts of
100%.
The world. And like, you know, why shouldn't we be, you know, driving the forefront of like foundational innovation? And I think that's the second thing. And you know, like altogether, what does that mean? That means like, you know, we're thinking about the core technical challenges, we're thinking about like the applications of that science, but also there's, you know, in different parts of the world, you get inspired by different things.
Yes.
And that could be something in the culture, that could be a societal problem, that could be that you don't have access to the same resources, and that lets you innovate in different ways. That lets you, you know, maybe we work with a lot of situations where it's hard to get data. Say, for example, for African languages. So you can't just take the standard approach, is just collect a massive data set of all the English documents and train your ChatGPT, right? That doesn't work if you've got only a small number of documents in a language.
100%.
And so we've actually got to think differently. It inspires different methodologies.
Yes.
And so from that perspective, it's also like important because, you know, if we ultimately care about making the world a better place, you know, the best ideas can come from anywhere and should come from anywhere and everywhere. And so I think it's really important that like everybody plays a role in this conversation. And that's before we even get to like ethical questions and like societal impact questions, right? Again, there's cultures and societies are established in different ways, and we can't just take like a norm for the way decisions are made in one part of the world. Like, maybe it does apply, but maybe it doesn't apply exactly the same way, or like the way people communicate might affect the way that you should be interacting with a robot. And again, we need all this knowledge. Like, if we're trying to understand how to make everyone's life better and advance human knowledge and all of these wonderful causes, we really need to be thinking about it from every possible angle.
In 2017, you start deep learning in Daba, you and your co-founders, and you know, you go on to 2018, Stellenbosch, 2019 in Nairobi, and you're organizing all this network's body of knowledge and resources. At the same time, parallel to that, you have a lot of, you know, commercialization of AI technologies all over the world. You've then co-founded Lilapa AI. What was the mood of the time when you were establishing Lilapa AI with your co-founders, and what was the aim of that time?
So it was interesting, right? Because there was a lot going on all over the place. We saw, like, communities like Masakane grew out, the language type community, and there was just a lot of excitement, more networking across the continent happening. And kind of in parallel, we'd been pushing quite hard to help students go and study abroad and get opportunities a lot in like the US, in Canada, Europe, and so on. And so we saw a lot of this happening. A lot of the big tech companies started hiring Africans, and we felt like these were huge wins.
Yes.
But at the same time, there's still a lot of big problems in Africa. And while a lot of research attention is now thinking about this, you know, there's a big gap between doing the research and scaling it to solve problems.
100%.
And so that was the one thing that, like, there's this gap and we need to start thinking about that. On the other hand, with all these people now going abroad, many of them that we were talking to, like our former students, saying that, you know, they're doing amazing stuff or they're finishing degrees and they're keen to come back, but there isn't really the...
A vehicle for them
exactly,
to do that.
Yeah. Right, you know, maybe like the options would be limited to, like, you know, get a good paying job at a bank, but like not giving them the kind of impact or maybe the excitement that they wanted to work in. And so we saw that, you know, there were these couple of things. One, there's a lot of problems that need to be solved. And two, there's a lot of people that are getting trained in great ways and want to come back. I mean, even if they're getting trained locally, there's just not the job opportunities for them. And so on the one hand, we've been working with some of the tech companies to set up labs in Africa, but really there's this huge gap that like, you know, there should be thousands of these big, exciting startups happening 100%. Across Africa. And so we thought, let's take the plunge and try it and see what happens. That feels like the next step on the journey of what we're trying to build. And again, it's not just for the small group of us 100%. To build. This is now a community effort that, 100%. You know, there's thousands of people pulling in all these positive directions. 100%. And that felt like, you know, we'd help build the networks. We'd 100%. Help establish a lot of that. We felt like we were well positioned to take that next
100%.
Step.
Prof, in your understanding of the landscape, in your journey, from you said something very critical, from theory to, you know, practicality, what are some of the barriers in really igniting, you know, for-profit businesses or even NGOs to really catapult, take this technology and catapult, you know, solution-driven options to really make a dent in some of our problems on the continent?
I mean, there's a lot of problems in different ways. You know, for example, fundraising is difficult. We're starting to see more and more VCs that are getting more comfortable investing in Africa, which is really exciting. But we've also spoken to many that said, you know, for various reasons, from the investment committees, they can't invest in Africa. And, you know, so that's a big challenge. To me, actually, one of the big things is we're still kind of lacking the critical mass. And we're starting to get this in a few places. We're starting to get a lot of really good people across the continent. But you really need a hub of people that can hang out together, can keep pushing each other, inspiring each other, getting, you know, role models, whether it's in research or in industry and startups. And that needs to happen more.
Yes.
You know, I talk about this also in the university context. If you've got, say, someone who, in a department, goes to do his PhD, you know, wherever in the world, some fancy place, and they come back, and go back to their department. And now they're sitting there and they want to do all this crazy research stuff.
Yes.
But they can't because, like, maybe they're the only one with a PhD or with that international training. And so now they've got to take the lead in everything from grant writing. They've got a lot of lecturing to do. They've got a lot of, like, admin and politicking to do. And then you burn out like that. And, you know, you could imagine an alternative situation where five people did that in one department. And now they can kind of support each other and help carry the weight and, like, more likely to turn that into a big success story.
Yes.
And I think that's maybe the next piece that we need to think about is how to make this happen in more and more places.
100%.
And so, you know, it's difficult to do that just like geographically in one place. There's one beautiful thing about the Indaba is we've got this community that now spans the continent, people that can talk together, bounce ideas around, travel together, you know, yes. start things up. And part of our mission's always been that, you know, when you go home after the Indaba, share content, share yes. the experiences. You know, a lot of our sessions are recorded. A lot of yes. our practical sessions are available for free online. And yes. so we want, you know, share with your communities. Even actually part of our application procedure yes. is how will you share with your community afterwards. And so we need people to be, and this is happening already, to yes. be starting to build stronger hubs of critical mass. Because I think when you're at a certain point, it just becomes easier and easier to spark new things. Yes. You know, we've got this other program, the Indaba X, which yes. came out. We basically had a bit of money left over mm-hmm. early on, and we thought, you know, can we start satellite events in other countries? But we had this principle: we didn't want to be telling other countries what to do, because we're very aware that, you know, maybe in South Africa research is a bigger thing, but in say Kenya the startup culture is a bigger thing, and so on. And so we want that community to drive that own process. And so we started the Indaba X, which was, you know, you can apply to host the event. You know, we discuss things like making sure there's good gender equality and so on. You've got good diversity of the backgrounds of people you're attracting. And when people at have events anywhere from, say, 30 attendees to 500 attendees, ranging from, say, 2 days to a week. And we've now run these in about 36 different countries. Well, we don't run them, right? We give them some funding. Mm-hmm. Often we'll get applications from a couple places in the same country, and we say, okay, we want you to come back with an application from both of you together. Ooh. So we connect those dots as well. We help them with some marketing, help them find speakers, but, you know, and then they must run their own event. And through these kinds of measures as well, we're trying to build that critical mass in different hubs all across the continent. And if that's happening there, if they're meeting up at the Indaba, like representatives of each one, and they're connecting Ooh. Here, hopefully this starts building that critical mass just at a much bigger scale.
I love the idea of what you guys have done with Indaba X. I think it's the whole concept of a satellite meetup community. I think that's where it starts, really. Just to see, you know, what has come about from, you know, deep learning and Indaba, the actual conference. And I'm looking forward to look what's going to come out of the smaller meetups. Right. And I think there's going to be a lot of potency out of that, because from an accessibility, it's more accessible.
Exactly.
They're in close proximity of each other. So the follow through even after
exactly.
the whole, you know, a mini community meetup, I think it's a lovely idea.
But, you know, it's also about like taking ownership, right?
Yes.
You don't just come to this event other people have organized. You take ownership in your own community. And many of the people that were Indaba X organizers mm-hmm. are now on the organizing committee mm-hmm. of the main Indaba, which increases the diversity. We've moved away from it being basically a group of South Africans to, you know, people from all over, like yes. the general chairs are yes. now, you know, we've got a South African, we've got a Tunisian, and we've got a Ghanaian this year. And like, that's just so cool, like yeah. from three very different regions yes. of the continent.
Yes.
And like, again, I don't think that would have been possible a few years ago.
Yes. Prof, there's a lot of excitement and activity around AI, machine learning, and robotics. At the same time, there's a lot of fear. From an academic point, where do you rate as African AI scholars we can contribute? What vacuum is there we can contribute to sort of deal with some of the misconceptions and fears around LA, around AI, where there's a vacuum?
I mean, I think, so I personally struggle with this. You know, I'm in the field because I really believe that, you know, this is the pathway to making the world a better mm-hmm. place. Right, we need more intelligence helping us solve our difficult problems. I also think with such powerful technology, there's huge numbers of like really bad risks. Mm. And like, this is something I grapple with as an academic in my day job as well. And, you know, I think firstly, it's really important that we don't just have this technology thrown at us by, you know, a few countries or corporates or something. Like, we need to be able to take some degree of ownership in this. And like, you know, this might be being very active in the development, but it might also be understanding it well enough that we can talk to the elders in our communities mm-hmm. to not just, you know, trust all anything that gets sent to them on 100%. WhatsApp. It might be being aware enough of what's going on to talk to our local politicians to make sure there's data privacy. It 100%. Might be to connect up to sociologists and psychologists in the way that we're treating and thinking about work. And mm-hmm. so I think for me personally, it's really important that like everybody in the world needs to have some idea of what this technology is about, needs to have some connections to people that understand it deeply. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really critical for how the next few decades are going to play out, how all this crazy technology is going to drastically change, I think, every aspect of human life. Mm-hmm. And if we're just watching it from afar, that sounds particularly dangerous. Ooh. But if we can actually, at the very least, steer how it's impacting our countries, our lives, our communities, I think that's like, I don't think you can downplay the importance of that.
Okay, Prof, I need some inside information. Where are we going next year? Deep learning in Durban, 2024?
Oh, that has not yet been determined.
Prof Benjamin Rossman, thank you so much for joining us on iAfrican.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for hosting us.
Deep Learning in Durban 2023. I'm loving it. My first one. Looking forward to many more. And I'm excited to see a lot more commercialization of the academic output and the body of knowledge that we're amassing here. I think that's the part where I'm really looking forward to. Because, I mean, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, it'd be good to have 3, 4, 5 really, you know, nice startups coming, having came from deep learning.
I challenge you, 30, 40, 50 of them.
I like that. I like that a lot. Prof, thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to iAfrican Bites. Please share your feedback with us on our socials. On Twitter at iAfrican. On LinkedIn at iAfrican.com. And check out our other podcasts, The Tefo Mohapi Show, Take Legal Matters, and The Lead Creator, on all podcast streaming platforms. And also make sure to head over to www.iafrican.com. That is iafrican.com/radio. And subscribe for notifications. iAfrican Bites is an iAfrican Media original show. Produced by Nzalo Mbangana and content producer and host by Don Kotokwane.